Hi, everyone. It's Mind Rolling, Raghu Marcus back. And I have a special guest today, Tom Blue Wolf. Tom, welcome to Mind Rolling. And nice to meet you, really.
Nice to meet you, too. And it's an honor and a pleasure to be here.
So Tom is a Native American spiritual guide. I'm going to read a little from your bio, if you don't mind, Tom. Tribal ambassador, peacemaker, faith keeper, and you're a musician. He's a musician, artist, herbalist, which we will talk a little bit about, naturopath, environmentalist, and author, and born in Southern Alabama. Thank God for what happened yesterday. raised and taught in the traditional ways by his Creek grandparents. And you have a tribal affiliation, Tom, with the Yifala Band, the Star Clan of the Eastern Lower Muscogee Creek Nation, right?
Correct.
Okay. Listen, you know, I really wanted to do this, and I've wanted to do this. You know, we've been talking since the summer for quite some time, just because the environment that we are in this country has gotten completely unbalanced, if we want to use the most understated word that we could possibly use in this situation. And, you know, and throughout my own life, I have, you know, been put in touch at various times with Native American traditions and just recalling how much that tradition is about being in balance, and certainly in balance with nature and in balance with the inner self. And I just thought, boy, do we really need to recall that. And I thankfully was introduced to you by a mutual friend. And so I'm really happy to have you just elucidate to us a little bit in this short time that we have, you know, some of what I believe can be an incredible, antidote to some of the horrific polarization that's going on in this country.
Well, that's a conversation that's been going on for a long time, especially around council fires amongst indigenous people in every country that I've been to. But in this country in particular, you know, there's ways of identifying these cultural groups. We call them dominant culture. And or the invaders or the conquerors or the colonizers, you know, there's so many ways of addressing that particular characteristic of the human being right now. And to quote a friend of mine, you know, I was in a seminar in Germany last summer for the Goethe Cultural Institute. And they were going to introduce me. It was a rather large festival. And the fellow said, should I introduce you as a Native American? Should I introduce you as a First Nations person? Should I introduce you as a Muscogee Creek? You know, how should I introduce you? And I thought for a minute, and I thought, well, for me and for our people, the issue right now is this. You know, I said, well, I'd like for you to introduce me as a person that's struggling to be a human being in a world that's rapidly forgetting what that means.
Mm, yeah.
I mean, I wanted to go beyond the nationalistic and delusional ideologies that people get into about who they think they are, rather than, you know, we're all in the family of man. Mm. That's not new. But to live as though that's the fact, or that that's true in balance. It was kind of like a mutual friend of ours once said, you know, our people believe that we're actually walking each other home. You know what I mean? We you know, there's billions of people have been on this planet, and hopefully billions of more will be on this planet. But right now, we're on this planet together, sharing this incredible experience of life, not just the two-leggeds, but the four-leggeds, the flying ones, the swimming ones, all the tree people, the rooted ones. I mean, this whole place is alive and teeming with creation. Hmm. And that's amazing, and that's miraculous. And so we want to honor that process. And that seems, as you referred to earlier, that seems to be lost. It's just not on some people's menu, you know, when they look at how to behave and the things they aspire to, they forget all about that. We're, you know, a friend of mine once said, you know, what if the woman you love more than anybody else was about to have a baby, about to bring creation into the world? How would you behave when you're in that room with her? Would you talk a little softer? Would you walk a little lighter? Mm. Would you try to support her and help her? And we all say, well, yeah. Well, they say, well, that woman is Mother Earth, and she's always giving birth. And so we do want to walk lightly on her and speak in a way that's good, the sacred conversation. My grandmother said, the world is perfect. There's just so many people having a bad conversation. What if we aspired to raise the level of our personal poetry so that everything we said to each other was a heartfelt characteristics of what we hold dear about what it means to be human? And it was reflected in our conversations. That would be a good place to begin. This change is just how we speak to one another. You know, so many people seem to have contempt right now for the condition rather than compassion and empathy and all the things that, you know, great people have talked about over the years, you know, to share life together. That seems to be the issue, and for us, the solution is, you know, mean what you say and say what you mean and be compassionate and share life in a good way, because there's babies in the room, you know, and children are our hope for the future, and you want to give them something to aspire to. You want to motivate them with the miraculous aspect of what it means to be alive. That's, we have ceremonies. See, one of the things we saw that was missing is rituals, ceremonies, and rites of passage that actually have meaning for a community. When you bring someone through that experience, it actually transformed them when they are acknowledged for their mileage, you know, their walk on the earth, their medicine walk. It changes things. I think that that's a really good place also to get involved.
That's a good jumping off point from where we are right now. Rites of passage. And, you know, I go back to the beginning here when I asked about your formative years. Can you talk about growing up, where you grew up, and your own rites of passage, how that happened for you and so on? I mean, my first podcast on mind rolling, Tom, were pretty much of a description of the things that absolutely transformed me to believe that there was a reality beyond my senses, beyond the depression that I was in about the society I lived in and so on. And I'd like just to hear about your rite of passage.
Well, a lot of it had to do with the stories that I was told when I was very young.
By your grandparents, is that correct? Is what I
that's correct. Yeah, my mother and father passed away rather early, and so my grandfather and my grandmother and my great uncles and all those kinds of elders and family members were around. It was a small community in Alabama, and most everybody, you know, spoke the same language, and we shared the gardens. You know, we had a community. You know, it was a village. It was called the Porch. Mm. And as a young man, as a young boy, you know, I spent a lot of time fishing. Mm. And so my grandfather would, when I would do these activities, he would bring to my attention the sacredness of that activity. Like every morning we would have to be thankful that we had water, you know, so we did a little water ceremony where we would just acknowledge water. He said water was alive and water had a memory, and you know, it came from a place that had no beginning and went to a place that had no end. And so he said, and without water, there is no life. Water is life. And so that would be the first aspect of gratitude when we woke up in the morning, was to thank creation for the element of water. And so when I went fishing, it would be about that water. And then the fish, which I really didn't eat them. I just catch them and throw them back. Mm-hmm. But But it was a way of introducing me to the ones that swim, you know, the various life forms. I went through a phase when I was about 5 or 6 where I fished a lot. And then we had a drum. One of the rites was to give us a drum so we could, you know, talk to the heartbeat. It was like our mother's heartbeat. And so one of the stories I was told was that I was a spirit in heaven once upon a time, and that I chose to come to this planet because there was a healing going on, and that I wanted to be involved as a steward and a caregiver of the planet. I was told that very young.
How old were you when these rites were given?
I was not yet 7. I was approaching 7.
Wow.
And that was, they told me this was my creation story, was that I came to the earth in the form of music, cosmic God's own music. And that they told me that's why it was called the universe, because it was only one song. Mm-hmm. And that every person was a kind of a note in that song. And so we kind of believed in the beginning was the song, and the song was good. And so we sang a lot and we danced a lot, you know, in gratitude and appreciation for the mother. And so one of the earliest memories is going out with my grandparents, my grandmother mostly. My grandfather would make the medicine, but my grandmother would go gather it. And most of the time. And so she would tell me what this is and what that is, and these various families of the different kinds of roots and tree barks and flowers and seeds and berries and whatnot. And one of the most amazing ones was the mushroom people, and how that she explained to me that they were the nervous system and the kidneys of the forest. You know, like the mycelium running underneath the earth was sending messages and taking messages from all the different life forms. And so to always feel like that everything that was alive had a purpose and a destiny to fulfill, it was a transformational experience for me. When she explained to me one day, we took acorns, you know, and prepared them properly so that we could turn them into flour. We had acorn flour because acorns were everywhere. And so one day I was looking at them and I asked my grandmother, I was about 8 at this time, and she said, and I said, how do you suppose this acorn actually turns itself into an oak tree if it's planted, you know? And she said, well, that acorn has a dream. And if the life fulfills itself in all of its ways, that dream will be fulfilled, and the destiny of that acorn is to become a oak tree. And then she told me that every life form was like that. Every seed carried a dream, you know, and the honeybees were the closest people to that dream because they gathered it, you know, and spread it like pollinators so that the dream could manifest itself, so that the earth could replicate itself in its own image every day and all the life forms on it. So as I was absorbing that information and processing it and actualizing it in my own life from day to day, it was about 12 or 13 before I could actually wrap my mind and my heart around what she was saying. Even though I was listening to these stories, you know, they kind of came in little tiny bits and pieces until when I was around 13, we had another rite of passage ceremony that actualized the fact that I demonstrated by going on various, you know, adventures in the woods down there in the various forests around that part of Alabama. And to recognize that and to know that this whole place is alive and you can actually speak to it. There's like this thread between all life that it's like in a more mundane sense, my grandfather would tell me, grandson, they're not going to remember anything you say. They're only going to remember how you make them feel. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of how it was in the forest, you know. Mm. I had an interesting conversation the other day with a fella from Fort Benning. He wanted me to sit in for a couple of weeks and do some training for those fellas down there in Special Forces about actually somehow maybe accidentally getting stranded in a hostile situation. And so I took the opportunity to say, well, you know, Colonel, I don't think the situations are hostile. I think we bring the hostility with us when we come. And he said, well, what are you suggesting? And I said, well, you know, these people are never going to be lost once they meet Mother Earth, because she's always going to know where they are. Mm-hmm. And he paused for a minute, and then he said, we don't do that touchy-feely stuff down here. Yeah, right. It's kind of funny. So, you know, as and having all said all this, you know, I feel like that little boy inside of me never really went anywhere. It's just got some tenure now. Mm-hmm. And I'm still kind of reading the same book over and over, and every time I read it, something new appears. Mm-hmm. I reflect on these stories of my grandparents, and they have more meaning now for me than ever before. So I really believe the quest for a good story and creating a really beautiful life with a nice way of speaking to people is critical to alter what we're addressing here.
While you talk about your formative years and these rites of passage and the download, shall I say, from your grandparents, you know, we're not that far off from around the same age, you know, very loosely, probably within 10 years or something. While you were doing that, and that was happening, and you talked about those rites, you know, going off into the woods and so on, and going through some other rites of passage. I did have a rite of passage. I'm Jewish, so I had a bar mitzvah, which was, how quickly can I get through this shit, and how much money am I going to make on this so I can get out of my house as soon as possible? Okay, that's where I was. Very unhappy. I got nothing down low, and I represent, you know, middle white. I mean, I'm from Canada and I'm from Montreal, but it wasn't really much different than, you know, white middle America, upwardly mobile kind of people that were absolutely devoid of any download, any transmission. I mean, okay, I shouldn't say that as blanket as that. I'm sure there are people who were born into a family where there was some connectivity beyond what society was handing out. And, you know, my father flew a bomber pilot in World War II. He was a very wounded inside, never mind what happened, you know, in the physical plane. And so that's what I was fed. And I'm listening to you and going, Jesus Christ. Wow, Tom, that's quite a lovely incarnation that you were handed. And it's amazing. And but I have to think, I mean, of course, you didn't go to any, you know, to the school dance or, you know, the graduations, you know, all of that. So what happened with that stuff, which had all of that other, you know, very rough kind of situations with, you know, competitiveness and the way in which young people treat each other at times, which is so callous. What happened with, I'm just, because you're presenting such an incredible picture that there must be something I'm saying, Tom.
Right. Well, you know, we lived in there's a context within which the people around us were in. You know, Alabama is not famous for being a compassionate place. Once upon a time it was, you know, it was named after the Albamo natives, which is people of peace. So once upon a time it was filled with peaceful people. But that was a long time ago. But see, I was born in the 40s. And so late 40s, early 50s, there was a lot of segregation in Alabama. You know, there was a white bathroom and a black bathroom, you know, white water fountains and black water fountains. And the black people had to sit on the back of the bus. But native people had no bathroom, no water fountain, and couldn't even get on the bus. And so we were somehow ostracized in some way that unfortunately became accepted. That that's just who we were. We were still considered wildlife by the Department of Interior. And so, and a lot of people treated us that way. So, you know, and so we stayed pretty close to ourselves, you know, not unlike a lot of African communities. You know, I go to Africa quite a lot, and to Zimbabwe and Botswana. And it just reminds me of when I was a child, because they still live in these kind of villages where they just are very close-knit. Everybody helps each other. It's like a 200-person family. And, you know, they nobody's hungry. Nobody needs a place to sleep. Everybody gets somebody to love on them. You know what I mean? It's real sweet. And so, fortunately or unfortunately, I missed out on a lot of the contextual, social kinds of conditioning of the system that so many people I meet today were raised in. You know, a lot of the times I felt like when I was a child that I was somehow missing out, because I'd see all these other people doing things, you know, that we didn't have anything to do with, almost like Amish and Mennonites, you know, we were different. And so the things I learned were about gardening and, you know, the water and the river and the trees and the plants and such. And so when people say, well, can you read and can you write? And so my grandmother started teaching me, you know, we actually read the Bible quite a lot. And so that's how I learned to read. And so finally they enrolled me in a school, but there was only like 15 kids in this school building, in this classroom. Everybody was in, you know, first grade to the eighth grade or whatever, was all in the same room. And everybody's just helping each other. And then once in a while, I'd just jump out the window and run off. Mm-hmm. And later on, I'd have to go back. But if I had to help them, you know, with their dogs, my grandfather trained hunting dogs. He had about 30 of them all the time. And so I helped him with those. And we had horses and mules and hogs and chickens, you know. And so there was just a lot to be done. And like I said, you know, we like to do ceremonies every day and dance every day in some way, until my grandmother said to me one day that I would learn sooner or later that actually life was a dance. And that if you actually paid attention, you'd understand that you don't dance to arrive somewhere. You dance to enjoy every step. And so I kind of got into that. And then when I would... It was probably later in my teens when I started venturing out into a lot of cities and things like that, and became joined the military, that I actually got a feeling of how different my childhood was from everybody else I talked to, except for other indigenous people who were raised in, I mean, most natives on reservations in this country and in Africa and South America were all kind of raised the same way.
Curse and a blessing, obviously. And by the way, excuse my naivete, really asking that question of, you must have had some, you know, tough stuff when you were growing up. And of course, I'm completely, that's a naive question that's oblivious to the fact of what was going on at that time in the 50s. 60s even in this country around Native American people, so excuse me for that. There's something that I just picked up on some of the stuff that I was looking at that you're involved with, and I'll just quote it a little bit and we can talk about it. As the mother's magnetic field drops and her temperature rises, we get closer to the time of the quote-unquote great cleansing. This is the perfect time to strengthen the core of our being as we shed that which no longer serves us and surrender to the courage that lies deep in our rootedness. The over-harvesting of all the various life forms that make up her body has compromised her immune system. If we are not the ones doing the harvesting, then we will be the ones that are harvested. And in another, as part of the same thing, we need to celebrate the dreams that lie at the core of our being and learn the meaning of, quote-unquote, giving away that which is sacred to us to make room for what the Creator has next to us as we move towards the deepest part of her heart. And if this is not a... just a core statement of what's going on and what we need to do now. I don't know what is related both to, of course, the environment, but also to what's going on as us, as being part of that one body. So maybe you could speak to that when you talk about giving away that which is sacred to us to make room for what the Creator has next for us, giving away that which is sacred. So that, and also surrendering to the courage. Those are two things that I'd love to hear you expand upon a little bit.
Well, the idea being there is that we're not the only life forms. Our people think this whole universe is alive, that we're on like some incredible motion machine, but it's alive, so it's a being. And so we believe what happens to the universe happens to us, and what happens to us happens to the universe. And we're not part of nature. We, in fact, are nature itself. And so on the earth, the people are representative of her immune system. So on a good day, we feel what she feels. She feels what we feel. When we can say we're never lost, Mama always knows where we are. So ever how we behave and ever what characteristics we exhibit, ever what we do, is going to be felt by the mother. And so it was like earlier, you know, we're walking through creation and she's alive and she's given birth. And how do we behave as the immune system? And so my people right now talk about it this way. They say Mother Earth is very sick right now. And they believe that she has an autoimmune deficiency, because what's happening is people are attacking each other just like cells in the body, and they call it cancer. They call it cancer when it's going on in your body, when cells don't recognize each other and they think it's a foreign substance, and then they attack it, and then you become, you know, infected. And right now it seems like the diseases are greed, fear, and control. And once you even get close to them, you get part of that feeling, and it takes you away from this symbiotic relationship with the mother, and puts you into another place where you actually feel like, you know, you're apart from nature, not a part of nature or nature itself. And so then you make all these decisions based on that confused delusion of an ideology that you hold. So you think, well, I'm a Republican, I'm a Democrat, I'm a Catholic, I'm a Muslim, I'm a this, I'm a that. And the more you think like that, the further you get from the mother, because we believe to have what it is we dream of, you have to surrender to the courage to be this person, this human being. And the courage comes from allowing yourself to be loved by someone, and the strength comes from loving someone. So if you can love someone and then allow yourself to be loved by someone in all the right ways, good ways. A fellow asked me the other day, he said, well, what if you just don't know the right thing to do? I said, well, just make sure you do the next thing right. And so that's how we believe. So if you actually, I mean, this is a start. I mean, I've talked to people about this before, and it seems to be a stretch for a lot of people to actually give it up and say, you know, what do I owe my life to? You know, how did I get here? My grandmothers and fathers on back, as far as anybody can remember, who worked and played and prayed so hard like this, just so that we could walk for a little while on this earth. So we must respect and acknowledge and thank our ancestors for what they did, so that we can enjoy this time on earth. And if we're going to enjoy this time on earth, and we love the water and the air and the earth and the trees and the thing and the people, we love all this place, it's a story. So what if in the old days the people would say, I'm just going to have the best story I can. So you came up with people like Crazy Horse and Tecumseh and all these wonderful people who just wanted a good. They used to be, when we'd go to these council fires all around the country, they never ask you who you are. They ask you, you walk in, they say, what's your story? And then you tell them the story, and ever how good that story is, that's who you are. You are your story. You know, you create this feeling of you know, this union and the compassion and magnanimous kinds of, you know, peaceful warriors kind of thing. Funny thing, we dug up a bomb. I mean, we didn't, but some people were building a hotel up in North Georgia. And they came upon all these artifacts. And there was about six pipes they found that were a pipe on one side and a tomahawk on the other. Mm. And so I just felt so happy to see that the tomahawk side was practically like new and the pipes were all wore out. So they must have, every chance they had, chose peace instead of war. And it's a choice. And so if you think, well, so how do you, that is a question, you know, that people say, how do you come to a place where you just want to love the children and love the place and just realize that it is sacred and this is your life and what kind of story are you going to leave, and that you care about the legacy that you leave behind. You know, people who have horrible stories don't get remembered as much as the people that have beautiful stories that thousands of years later, we're still talking about Buddha. We're still talking about Jesus, you know. Mm. What a story. And so each one of us could have such a story if we were willing to be courageous and strong and challenge ourselves to become, you know, really good human beings. I mean, it's almost simplistic in its tones, yeah. But it's a very big challenge to say, I'm just going to work on my characteristics. I'm just going to work on my, you know, my highest qualities of what it means to be human. I want to be compassionate and empathetic and forgiving and merciful and reverent and respectful and kind. And most of all, I want to let people know how much I love them. How do you get there?
Yeah, well, that is the million-dollar question. And it's one that we talk about a lot. I think, earlier we've talked about Ram Dass a little bit, and you quoted him earlier. And certainly one of the main things that he talks about is the thing that you can do to serve, before you think of anything, any kind of social action, anything, helping anybody, is to help yourself by, you know, going inward and cleaning up whatever needs to be cleaned up and finding your, shall we call it, truer self, that place in us that does love us, ourselves right off the bat, and then we're able to share that. So that's certainly a major commonality. And so on that point, what are some of the things you do? I know you lead groups. I know you do these amazing sweat lodges, which our mutual friend said, I absolutely got to get up there, and one day I will, Tom, and take part. And but what are some of the other things that you do suggest to people that can allow them to find a way to a path to all of the things that we're talking about, becoming more compassionate, becoming more loving, becoming more wise, and being able to share that?
Well, it seems to be a menu of alternatives that you could go, because some people are so different, you know, about the ways they approach things. And the ceremonies that we do are critical to this, because it's a community of people. So you have a whole lot of people joining in on the, what we call a sacred conversation, you know, where you consciously put your intentions on some of these qualities that we talk about, rather than just be random and just kind of have knee-jerk reactions to issues, that you actually respond, you know, you develop, like Thich Nhat Hanh says, you develop this mindfulness, mm-hmm. you know, about it. That's critical, and not just react to a situation, but think about it. You know what I mean? Say, wait a minute. And if you really struggle to understand someone else, rather than condemn them or judge them or criticize them, but just to understand, then you realize, say, well, wait a minute. First and foremost, we're all human beings. So let's say that we're all called the family of man. So we're brothers and sisters, right? And so if you bring that down to most of the indigenous villages I've been to, That's how they feel. Everybody has a grandfather. Everybody has a grandmother. Everybody's in their place, and they understand that these relationships are meaningful. Even it's built into the language. Like we have names around here that are left over from when the Creek people actually populated this area. Like I live in a place called the Conasauga Watershed. The Conasauga means you walk in prayer. Mm-hmm. You pray while you're walking. And then there's another place around here called Kusawatia. That means, and it's a real estate development now. They just borrow the name. But once upon a time, it meant where the peaceful people gather. And it wasn't necessarily a location. It was a way of being in relationship with wherever you were. And so it's in the language. And so the language, one of the first things that we talk about in these ceremonies, and whether it's a seminar or whether it's a lecture or whether it's a medicine council or whether it's wherever I go and whatever the context with is within which I deliver this information, I like to think that if we change the way we talk, it's going to make a very big difference in the ways that people respond to us. And my grandmother used to say, for people who know what you're talking about, you don't need an explanation. And for the people who don't know what you're talking about, there is no explanation. So that whole idea of understanding and being compassionate and being kind, she also said it's more important to be kind than it is to be right, because if you're kind, you're right all the time. Mm-hmm. And so these kinds of things, and it's easier to, or seems to be easier when you work, like it's easier to raise a child than it is to transform an adult. Mm. And so if you start early enough, you got a better chance of instilling some of these qualities.
Yeah, but especially still, if we have your grandmother, Tom, sounds like.
Yeah.
I wish we had your grandmother. Assuming she's not with us.
No, she's gone a long time ago. But I mean, my original one, I still have a grandmother.
Yeah.
She's 96. But yeah, I've had like five grandmothers in my life, because every time one of them dies, another one adopts me.
Oh, God. Talk about good karma. Jeez.
Yeah. I love it. Mm. But see, it's a story. I mean, so I said, this is the story. So if you say, what's the story of your life? And you say, well, wait a minute. This one fellow said, I was adopted. I don't know who my parents was. And I spent 20 years in prison. So, you know what I mean? So he's got this whole nother story.
Yeah.
And he says, how can I alter that story? And I said, well, we had a prison ministry for a long, long time. And we called it, the Native American Cultural Awareness Program, and within the federal prison system. And so these fellows, they would all have these horrendous stories about how they got there, and then wind up being inmates incarcerated in a penal system run by the federal government. I said, well, that story, I don't like that story. Do you like that story? And they go, no. And I'm going to say, why don't you pick out some of the details along the way that gave you a little hope and make that a bold, italic, underline, and forget about the parts that were like horrendous. And so they said, well, what's your motivation here? What's your aspiration? Where are you going with this? I said, well, I would like for you to take responsibility for all the things that you've done that got you here. And rather than feel like you're being incarcerated in a penal system for criminal activities, you could just as easily go inside your spirit and say, God made me and God don't make mistakes. And so this is really a monastery and I'm a monk. And this is just what it looks like today. And so I have the alternative to expand my menu and learn things while I'm here. I don't have to spend this whole time under the, Nelson Mandela, when he was incarcerated for 20 years, said it was the most enlightening period of his life. And he never felt like he was in prison. He just felt like he was as free as a bird. Mm. So it's a perspective that one has to learn. Yeah. I think not unlike playing the piano, you just got to start somewhere.
Yep. Yep. No, perspective is huge. I talk about it a lot on these podcasts. So that's a wonderful sharing. Absolutely. I just mentioned to you that, boy, you have got great karma with that grandmother and you all these subsequent grandmas that took you in and so on. What, and I know, certainly, about the the way that the Eastern mystical traditions use that word. How does that word fit within the tradition that you've been brought up in? You know, I know it wouldn't, you know, there's no name, but is there something that, it certainly is something that's been very important since I went over to India and got all of that transmission around, you know, the reality of how that works. Can you talk about that just for a sec?
The grandmother?
Well, the relation to the cause and effect, the reality of karma, how is that elucidated in your tradition?
Well, it's kind of like the old saying that you kind of get out of something what you put into it, and it gets amplified. And so our traditional perspective of our grandfathers would be that our grandfathers would tell these beautiful stories. Now, and we used to laugh and call them coyote stories, because the grandfather seemed to not really be interested in whether or not the story was true, only that it was a good story. And so, and we always enjoyed them. But if we really wanted to know the truth, we'd go to our grandmothers, because they were considered to be the keepers of the culture. And so they held in the highest esteem all these qualities that we aspire to. And they never told any coyote story. You know what I mean? But the grandfathers were entertaining, and you learned a lot, but you also wouldn't take it necessarily as always being something that you should aspire to in your heart. A lot of it was meant for your imagination, mm-hmm. you know, because they used to say the only nation they really wanted to belong to was the imagination.
I love that.
Mm-hmm. And so karma to me is like cause and effect. I mean, if you do good works, you're going to get responded to in good ways. That's typical. As long as you're in a community of people who understand what that means. See, that's one of the biggest traumas of the colonization of this country. They always said the last good year was 1491. And so once people arrived on 1492, and the Jesuits wrote back to wherever they came from, the first things were, you know, these people are like children. They'll give you anything. This place is going to be so easy to conquer. You know what I mean? And so they didn't understand. It was like they went from Alpha to Omega and didn't see what the trip was to get there. You know, they just saw it as an advantage and an opportunity to take everything away from these people who were so easily conquered, because they were so sweet and gentle and kind and compassionate. Now, they don't mean that a lot of people didn't have skirmishes and all that kind of stuff, but generally speaking, if you treat anybody in the old days with respect, they're going to treat you with respect. And if you come to them with gifts of love and compassion, then they return it. We had a story. There was this young girl. She was about 18, and she wanted to do something remarkable. You know, a lot of people aspire to have a story like Crazy Horse, you know. So they found a gourd of seeds. These seeds were ancient, hundreds of years old. They had been buried in this with this gourd. And so they opened it and saw these seeds, and some of the old men knew who those seeds belonged to, you know, what part of the country they came from. And so we felt like those seeds held the stories of the ancestors of these people, because these plants know those people. These people miss these plants. And so they've been missing a big part of their heritage, not having these seeds. So her great dream was to take these seeds back to those original people. And it was a huge, huge endeavor. I mean, it was like 900 miles. She had to go through the forest. She was 17, and all the things that she had to encounter on the way there to test her faith and her courage and so forth. Anyway, she made it. And as she arrived at the village, everybody was singing and dancing. And it was like, you know, just a big old party going on. And so she walked up to the fire, and as soon as she did, you could have heard a pin drop. Everybody just stopped. And she thought she had intruded on a major ceremony. So she got down on her knees and started asking for forgiveness and then told them why she came. What she didn't know was the reason they were celebrating. This is where karma kicks in. They had a prophecy that one day this little girl would come up out of the forest, bringing their ancestors back to them in the form of these seeds. And so they were expecting her. So she was going to give them those seeds, expecting nothing in return, just because it was good and right. And that's what needed to be done. And in return, she became a legend in that village. I mean, they talked about her forever. I mean, she was always Black White Buffalo Calf Woman. You know, she was talked about as Zalika, the flower from the East who brought their, you know. And so to me, that's good karma. She did something that was really kind and sweet, thoughtless of, you know, wasn't thinking about herself.
Right.
And she got the most highest gift you can get, which is to be, you know, embedded in everyone's heart for time to come.
Mm. Beautiful story, Tom. I love that. Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, we're just about at the end of our allotted time, but there's one thing that I just, I don't know who wrote this. Maybe you would. I did find it on when I was just doing a little bit of research. Humankind has not woven the web of life. We are but one thread within it. Whatever we do to the web, we do to ourselves. All things are bound together. All things connect. Another reflection of karma and our deeply rooted connectivity to each other, which we don't always reflect to each other. And when I started this, when we started this podcast, I said one of the reasons that I really wanted to chat with you was I do believe that your tradition offers so much for us to perhaps make any kind of breakthrough with the tremendous polarization, anger, fear, some of the things we've talked about that are going on in the West, in this country particularly, although I think it's in Europe as well, very much so. And this web of life and what we do to the web, we do to ourselves. So thank you, Tom, for sharing. It's been exactly what I had hoped for in terms of perhaps, you know, giving us all a little bit of a... I find myself just getting as caught in polarization as the next guy, girl. It's such a difficult time, and I've had decades of practice and so on, and I've the beings that I have met and it's still very difficult. And unless you know, we take the tenor that I've heard from through you, representing your tradition, unless we take that tenor of opting for hearing each other, for kindness and so on, I think we're in for more difficult times. And talk about when you talked about after 1491, from 1492 forward, what has happened in this country since then, perhaps, and talk about karma, that has created a karma for us here, which has produced what it is that is existent in the country in terms of the administration that we have and some of this really, you know, terrible polarization. So thanks again. We got to do this again, and I got to come over and get into a sweat this summer.
That'd be great. I'd also like to mention quickly that if people want to support some of the projects that we're in, you know, we make herbal products under the...
Oh, right. Yes, I wanted you to talk about that. Yeah, just mention where people can connect with you for some of these. Because
well, we have
talking about healing ourselves as healing everybody at the same time.
Well, yeah, they can support us. We have a our company is called Earth Keepers One Tribe Trading Company, and we're in most all Whole Foods stores around the Southeast, and lots of single, what we call mom and pop stores as well, you know. And so, and we have honeybees, and so we sell their pollen, and then we have a skin salve, and then we have a tea that's a cleanser, Muscogee tea. And so that would really help.
What's some the, of our, give us the website. So, and we're going to put this, this will be on the BeHereNowNetwork.com/mindrolling, and to the show notes page, which describes this podcast, we'll also have links, and we'll have, what is the link for people to be able to,
Earth Keepers One Tribe Trading,
earth.com, Earth Keepers One Tribe Trading.com.
And earthkeepers.net is just the simplest. If you go to earthkeepers.net,
okay,
it'll
great.
It'll direct you to several different places.
Okay. And to be in touch with you in any way, how people can do that?
Yeah, bluewolf@earthkeepers.net.
Okay, great. Well, Tom.
Yeah, I'd love to hear from, I'd love to hear from everybody. I mean, I my family keeps growing all the time.
Yeah, and you know, and people can take advantage because, as you've heard in this podcast, community is a huge aspect of treading the path, and it that's is right. for us as well. It's what I learned. That's what I, one of the main things we took back from India. We call it satsang. It's all the same, and that kind of sharing is probably top of the list. Actually, you know, the Buddha's, you know, the three vows of the Buddha to the Buddha, to the Dharma, and to the Sangha, satsang. Someone said, "Well, what's the most important?" And he said, "Community, satsang, Sangha." Absolutely, that was number one.
Right.
When taking refuges, so. Thanks again, Tom. We'll do this again. And everybody, we'll look forward to seeing you next week on Mind Rolling. Go to BeHereNowNetwork.com and enjoy all of the different podcasts from all these great teachers. And as I said, next week.
Thank you.